I have, ever since we started doing our planning, I have really been excited about our next speaker, Bill Acheson. Bill is an expert in nonverbal communication. He has worked with hundreds of thousands of individuals, helping them to understand that communication that we think is verbal communication is less than 50% of what we're actually communicating. He has worked with companies like AIG and Bank of America and Smith Barney and Morgan Stanley and Transamerica. And he is here to help us learn how to communicate in a way that perhaps we have not done before, to project ourselves and to understand what others are projecting, to understand where we are in the big picture. Bill Acheson.
Thanks, John. Oh, come on, crank it up. A little more, go for it. You realize you release endorphins. When you applaud, you release endorphins. You will actually feel better, and I know it works for me. Ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna change the pace of the way things are done. We're gonna kick for high energy, all right? I am from Boston. I think you know what that means. I do it faster than you. Nonverbal communication is the management of time, space, appearance, posture, gesture, facial expression, breathing patterns, touch, voice, and smell. I have a handout. You don't have to write these down. What we're going to do is we're going to show you the emotional side of selling, the emotional side of what you do. All right? You project through body language your emotional states. You don't do it with words. And what I'm going to do, and I have four presentations, this being the first, over today and tomorrow, what I'm going to do is basically change the way you do business, okay? In terms of your awareness level and how you're going to measure things. What I'm going to do is give you a set of tools so powerful you will use them before you leave this room. We're going to start right now with an exercise. Pens and pencils down, free up both hands. If you have a computer, put it on the floor or the seat next to you. Exercise number one, with both hands free. I want everybody to stand. I want you to shake hands with four or five people. Do what you normally do. We'll assess it in a moment. Okay, take your seats. For nonverbal exercise, you're a noisy bunch, all right? Four things go into a handshake. Let's start our education right now. Number one, lead with the right. Good so far? Got this one figured out. Number two, in a handshake, you must use direct eye contact. Let's see how you did. In this room, raise your hand if you are one of the people who did not, while shaking hands, receive direct eye contact from your partner. Anybody? Good. One person. Now, what's the other guy looking at? I'm always fascinated. Number three, you tell me. Lead with the right, direct eye contact. What's the third thing you must do in a handshake? Firm grip. Forget the hand. It's something else. Smile. Okay, let's refine our thinking. Now, we're going to do something called educomedy here, all right? We are looking at important information. What I've learned is that if you have emotion connected to it, you'll remember it. So, we say smile, and that's probably correct, but let's go through the history of that behavior. Smiling historically was done to determine social class. The quality of your dental care determined what side of the street you lived on, okay? So, here we are in Utah, yay, you smile. Folks, I am based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the University of Pittsburgh. We are 1 hour from West Virginia. Show your teeth. That's what we're talking about. All right? You go down to Morgantown. They are doing a quick count. All right? Shake hands. One, two, three, five. Pretty sure I got five. What we're doing, and, you know, I get teased about this. I always throw a West Virginia joke into every presentation. Anybody from West Virginia? Have I killed anybody? Nobody. And you never know. I'm in San Diego, I toss out a softie, a West Virginia joke, almost a standing ovation. So I thought, I'm not stupid, I'm gonna do more. So everything I said, I'd say, this is what this means, except in West Virginia. And they roared. Not until the end of the presentation, when somebody said, stay on stage, Bill, the president wants to meet you, did I realize just how funny this was. Out comes the president of Centris Spellman about 12 years ago. He says, Bill, I wanted to meet you. I wanted to let you know I, too, have a PhD, and it's from West Virginia University. Now I know why they're laughing. He's told me something I would never have believed in 100 years. Test it for yourself. He said, Bill, you tease about teeth in West Virginia, but I'll make you this guarantee. Google it, go on the internet, go to your history book, it doesn't matter. The toothbrush was invented in West Virginia. Get real. I'm thinking, there's a chance this toothbrush is invented in West Virginia. But have you ever had one of those things that nags at the back of your brain? You don't check it because it's so silly. About 2 weeks later, 2 a.m, right? You get up. I'm thinking, toothbrush, West Virginia. He's got to be kidding. I Google it. Toothbrush, history of. Hello? The toothbrush was invented in West Virginia. Apparently, had it been invented anywhere else, it would have been called a teeth brush. That's what we're going to do for the next 2 days. We are going to have some fun. All right? So you stood up and you shook hands with a variety of people. Let's find out how good your nonverbal communication, your body language skills are. Raise your hand. Oh, we better go through the four behaviors, hadn't we? Number one, lead with the right. Number two, direct eye contact. Number three, show your teeth. Number four, you give a verbal greeting. So if you did all those four things, think about it. It's a lot of activity. You did the right thing. Help me out, though. I want to see what your awareness level is. Raise your hand if you can accurately tell me from memory, while shaking hands, what your partner was doing with their non-shaking hand, with their left hand. What were they doing with the left hand and the left arm? Any takers? Ladies and gentlemen, you have missed the number one most accurate indicator of attitude and intent in a handshake. Incredible, isn't it? With a handshake, you've got to look me in the eyes, but by the time we're done, I'm going to have you training your peripheral vision to assess the left arm and hand. Attitude and intent are always projected. I have a rule of thumb. If you're taking notes, write this one down. Fit, F-I-T. Every feeling, intention, and thought that you project through body language. And so does your prospect or client. Every feeling, intention, and thought. I'm going to give you a story, and then I'm going to kick into what I really want to talk about this morning. Let's go there. Let's find out just how nonverbal communication works. Are you ready? We're going to go back to 1972. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my client did not commit a murder. The year is 1972. The courtroom is in Philadelphia, and Edwin Booth, my client, is accused of killing his wife. I will share with you a story by Alan Dershowitz of Harvard Law School of an attorney who will use my topic over the next 2 days, body language, in an attempt to gain an acquittal for his client. And to put it into historical perspective, I will not be using a glove. Good, real good. All right. I'm always trying to gauge the awareness level of the audience. You know, the glove reference is an OJ reference. If it does not fit, you must acquit. Okay? I am in Nashville, Tennessee. Nice people, but not socially aware. I said, I will not be using a glove. Dead silence. Look around the room. Hand goes up in the back. I say, yes. He says, glove reference. Michael Jackson, right? Can't tell him no. I said, exactly. Kept going. Ladies and gentlemen, 9 days of testimony. How are you going to vote? You are sitting in judgment of a man accused of first-degree murder. Now, in the audience here, I want you to determine what you would have done had you found yourself in the following situation. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you're tired. I know this is a closing argument. Just give me a moment. You are sitting in a very unique situation. You see, the prosecution team has accused Edwin Booth of killing his wife. That alone is not particularly unique. And I have a tough sell here. I brought before you a man not particularly likable. He has a history of being abusive to his wife, but remember, he's not on trial for abuse. Okay, his fingerprints have been found in blood on the murder weapon. Not a plus. But as you heard in testimony, when he came home that fateful night, he picked up an object from the floor of his unlit living room, a knife from his own kitchen. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I want you to think. Because the prosecution team, in their rush to bring this man to trial, has made one serious error. You are sitting in judgment of a man accused of first-degree murder in a trial where the prosecution team has failed to prove that a murder has even been committed. Mrs. Booth's body has never been found. They want you to look right past that little detail. Let's assume a murder has been committed. Let's all pretend that a murder has been committed. This is a court of law. We require proof they have not provided. They want you to look past that detail. You can't. Oh, they look for Mrs. Booth. You've all heard about it. They dragged the Schuylkill River, came up empty. They took hundreds of volunteers and went through the woods and fields near their home, found nothing. Hired to defend this man, we too looked for Mrs. Booth, but we began with a different set of assumptions. Our belief was that she was alive and well and living in another location. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, on my count of 10, our so-called murder victim will enter this courtroom through the double doors at the back of this center aisle. And when she does, you cannot convict my client. Are you kidding me? Imagine the tension in that courtroom. This is 1972. There's no Greta Van Susteren. Certainly no Nancy Grace. The OJ trial has not occurred yet. This is incredible drama in the courtroom in Philadelphia. This man defending the individual accused of killing his wife is about to produce the murder victim. Now the jury members are stunned. They are sitting on the wall over here to my left. They're looking out at the judge as if to say, is this guy serious? Can he do this? The defense attorney moves right into his 10 count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, calls out to the back of the courtroom. Well, by the time he does, think about it. There's not a person in that room who's failed to spin around in their seats in the center aisle. People are leaning in to get a clear look at Mrs. Booth as she enters the courtroom. In the front, spectators, and there are hundreds of them, they cannot see. They begin to stand in order to get a clear line of sight. And when they do, those jury members up against the wall can no longer see. They too must stand to have a clear line of sight. And they do. Turned in their seats, they begin to stand one by one. The doors at the back of the courtroom are slowly pulled open. And there's a pause. Freeze! Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, don't you move. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, take a look at yourselves. Consider for one moment the message you're sending to the people in this courtroom. Turned in your seats, most of you standing, a couple of you on tiptoes. But each and every one of you looking for the murder victim to come through those doors. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, in a few moments, the judge is going to advise you of a legal concept. We call reasonable doubt. He will tell you if you have a doubt that a murder was even committed. And look at yourselves. You have that doubt. You cannot convict my client. In the back of the courtroom, Dershowitz is writing feverishly, this will make legal history. On a charge of first-degree murder, the jury members are given their instructions, and they're put in the jury deliberation room. They will come back in less than 2 hours with their verdict. Edwin Booth is found guilty of murder in the first degree. Bummer. When they came back with a verdict of guilty, can you imagine how that attorney must have felt? We have proof. It's videotaped, or in those days, filmed. The defense attorney is stunned. He looks at the jury as if to say, what went wrong? What's going on here? Thanked for their services, they start to head out of the courtroom. Booth is about to be handcuffed and carted out the other door, but the defense attorney cannot help himself. He races to the first juror leaving. He says, how did you find my client guilty of murder when I prove reasonable doubt? Juror number 5 held up his hands. He said, hey, man, you had us dead to rights. I mean, each and every one of us standing there looking like dummies. But there was a problem with your clothes. You may not have noticed it. I didn't. But just one of us, just juror number 11, noticed something strange. See, in all the excitement of seeing Mrs. Booth come through those double doors, it was just juror number 11, just one person on the jury, who noticed in that entire room when those doors were pulled open, there was, in fact, one person who failed to turn around and look. And that idiot was your client. Do the math. Edwin Booth signaled what with his body language? I am the only person who knows, on no uncertain terms, that when those doors are pulled open, no one will be entering. It would cost him 17 years of his life. Nonverbal communication, how powerful is it? In a first encounter, it is 10 times more powerful than what you say. I come with three warnings. Let me get them right out there now. You're going to live with them for a couple of days. Number one, I've already identified it. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, all right? Vocalics, the manner in which we speak, is one measure. Verbal communication, and a powerful one. In face-to-face communication, vocalics or voice will account for 33 to 38% of the impact of your message. On the phone, somewhere between 66 and 72%. We'll go over that at some point. Number two, when we're looking at voice, we consider a variety of different things. Rate is one of them. Rate is the speed at which we speak. And I will share with you how it is measured in the United States. And you see if you don't agree. In the United States of America, the further north you go, the faster the speech patterns. The closer to the coast you are, the faster the speech patterns. True in every language, every culture in the world. Sole exception, Galveston, Texas. Nothing speeds these people up. Third factor is population density. The greater the population density, the faster the speech patterns. Let's take a trip around the country and see if you don't agree. Okay? Manhattan, Norton City on the coast, 210, 220 words a minute. You with me? Boston, my hometown, 160 to 180 words a minute. I know what you're thinking. I get it all the time. Boston, do you park your car in Harvard Yard? Come on. Do you have any idea what we're thinking when we hear that? Hey, listen to him. He sounds retarded. Pittsburgh, where I've been located as a professor at the University of Pittsburgh since 1985. Chicago, always the national average for speech. All the way down to Houston, Dallas, Denver, Salt Lake City, it doesn't matter. Major cities, central part of the country, you speak the national average. I'm speaking it right now. It is 120 to 140 words per minute. You speak on average 2 words per second. Let me do you one better and put some awareness into your speech. If you have a college degree, you have been studied, your speech consists of 61% one-syllable words. 61% of your speech consists of one-syllable words. You're sitting there right now saying, no way. Oklahoma, 47 words per minute. Can't work with those people. Just messing with you. But it gets slower. Two things are changing the way we speak. One is obvious. It's television. But that is, I believe, the second factor. You know what's more prevalent? Air conditioning. Air conditioning is primary for changing the manner in which people speak. We all live in the same temperate zone now. If you're in the South, believe me, you can get out of that heat and humidity. In 50 years. You couldn't. So what we find is that there are changes in the way people do business. Now, the reason I bring up the speed at which you speak is that I'm going to speak using a system called superlearning. I will speak as fast as 240 words a minute, sometimes 260. At other times, I'm going to move right into dead silence. And what's going to happen is I'm entering your brain through the right hemisphere. I am entering the emotional center of the brain. And what's going to happen there is no criticism. All criticism that you are rendering, including the stuff you're doing to me right now, you with the hand on your chin, I'll come after you. That's cynicism in a nutshell. But we'll get there. What I'm doing right now is I'm going to give you advice. I'm coming in through the right hemisphere. I will tell you there are 7 things you need to know. I will give you 2. You with me? I will mess with your head. This is not linear, it's circular. You'll be waiting to hear that third thing, and just like in hypnosis, I will send you all kinds of information you will not critically reject. It's stunning. All right? Congratulations, I see a lot of women in the audience. Let's get this out right now. When it comes to body language, women and men process the data a little bit differently. When tested, there's not that big a difference. When we test men and women, we're going to find women score in nonverbal communication tests, on average, 2 points better than men. 2% higher scores. That is not my real life experience. This is. In a face-to-face communication, a woman is 4 times more likely to see body movement and accurately assign message value. Let me tell you the differences because it goes to biology. Gentlemen, bear with me. Ladies, I'm about to confirm something you have long suspected. Men, on average, think one thought at a time. And yes, it is almost always the same thought. Gentlemen, I'm now here to confirm what you have long suspected about your spouse. Women, on average, because of the biology makeup of the brain, think between 4 and 6 thoughts simultaneously. How different is it? Check it out. Men listen with their ears. I always pause here because the men are like seriously lost. Where is he going with this one? Ladies, should I tell him? Women listen with their eyes. They're managing 10 different channels of communication simultaneously. What we're going to find is this. If you're processing the body language in a communication, the following is what occurs. Your information that you are processing, the information you process, is more emotionally revealing and more emotionally accurate. You may lie with words, but you will never lie completely with your body language. You will always give something away. And I'm not too worried about that, but we will get into it tomorrow. What I'm more worried about today is that you understand the system by which I'm presenting. I generally work with people who sell mutual funds, variable annuities, and some of you do. When I work with those people, I say, what is the role of emotion in sales? Now, I'm hired by a major wirehouse to determine this very fact. They have an unprecedented number of million-dollar accounts being transferred into their coffers. They want to know, what are we doing right so we can do more of it? I create a telephone questionnaire. I get 4 registered reps who start making calls. We will stop the telephone interview process at 24. Every single one of those clients is lying to us. Let me tell you how we determine this. Number 4 question on the survey. What is the primary reason you transferred your account from Wirehouse ABC over to Wirehouse X? 24 out of 24 said something like the following. The financial professional presented an intelligent investment program that made good sense for me and my family. What did you expect them to say? Follow-up question, number 5. Can you describe that investment program in detail? 22 out of 24, no. Hello? What's wrong with this picture? Oh, the 2 who said they could describe it? You know what happened, right? Fundamental flaws in the description. So 24 out of 24 either claim or in fact prove that they cannot describe the sophisticated investment program in which they are currently putting their money. Did they buy based on logic or based on emotion? Couldn't tell you. We can't measure it. Or can we? I went to the back door. I went to the 100 people who had moved a $1 million account out of Wirehouse X. They were willing to talk. 94% of them. 6% had died. 68% of client defections occurred because of an attitude of indifference on the part of the registered rep. 68% lack of what? Emotional connection. Did they buy based on logic? No, they trusted. That's the basis upon which they're going to do business with you. All right, we're going to find 3 things that you must project to initiate and maintain a long-running professional relationship. Number 1, you must project trustworthiness. All right, there's a twist. You must project trustworthiness. Here's the twist. You cannot do it verbally. I'll do it. You tell me if this is effective. Imagine yourself walking out into the reception area of your office and saying, "Hi, I'm Bill Atchison. I want to tell you before we even head back into my office, I will never lie to you." Feeling good? Don't. Initiating truth talk in a conversation, you'll find it preceded or followed by an attempt at deception better than 80% of the time. Invoking honesty is one of the most accurate indications of deception. Honest, seriously, trust me on this one. Got a better feel for it? Guess what? You missed my secondary cue. Let me do it again. Honest, seriously, trust me on this one. heightened vocal pitch. We're talking about voice. You get heightened vocal pitch accompanied with tooth talk in police interrogation studies. 100% accurate as an indication of deception. Really? The higher the pitch, we call it self-persuasion. They're trying to convince themselves. So trustworthiness, you cannot project verbally. Number two, you must project competence. You must project competence. Now, we have a difficult time as researchers. We like to isolate variables, okay? We have a very difficult time with this. We're going to take competence, confidence, self-assuredness, put them in a package we call personal power. All right? Personal power, I'm going to teach you what to look for in a prospect. You can identify high net worth with better than 75% accuracy, not by what they wear, but by how they sit. I'm going to show you the four things that clustered together will identify someone with $1 million in investable assets better than 70% of the time. Male profile won't work for women. They're really tricky. Okay? Number three, you must project likability. Oh, by the way, competence, confidence, self-assuredness, we cluster that in something we call personal power. Can you project personal power verbally? You walk into the room and say, "Hi, I'm Bill Atchison. I'm a very powerful man." Not effectively, can you? So we're going to have to look at that through nonverbal channels. Likeability. All our studies of conversational speech, we will discover the following. That the highest rated conversationalist invariably says the fewest number of words. Translation, you are now, you will continue to be paid based on your ability to listen. Wrong, you're not paying attention. Let me clarify, I set you up. You are not paid according to your ability to listen. Gentlemen, is there a woman in the world who thinks that men are better listeners than women? Is there a woman in the world who thinks that men and women listen with equal skill? No. They're kicked out of the sisterhood if they bite that one. Let me tell you the research. Men and women listen with equal skill, but we don't behave the same. You're not paid according to your ability to listen. You will be paid according to your ability to project the nonverbal communication behavior we associate with good listening. So we're going to have to look at that. And we're going to find how men and women communicate differently through their body language. All right? Three sessions I have. I have a 4-10 session. Here's what I'm doing today. I'm going to look at first impressions. We'll look at how in 1/24th of a second, your prospect has already made 60% of their decisions about you, who you are, what you are. Then in 3 seconds, that decision process is verbalizable. They will identify with 80% confidence 38 character and personality traits in the first 3 seconds. Don't believe me? Read the book Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, subtitled The Power of Thinking Without Thinking. We make instantaneous decisions. All right? Now, we're going to find when we look at first impressions that if you are ever hired for a job, the likelihood is 94% of the time you are hired based on your body language. In job interview situations, the decision to hire is made in the first 4 minutes of the interview 94% of the time. And when I work with human resources professionals, I tell them right out front, please, if you haven't decided in the first 4 minutes whether or not you want to hire somebody, you don't. That's how powerful it is. That's what a prospect is doing with you. So we'll look at the power of first impressions. We will analyze handshakes in a crazy way because I've got to close in 2 minutes. Let me tell you what's happening with that handshake. When you shook hands with somebody, I said, "Did you see the left arm and hand?" Let me tell you how we interpret it. 3/4 of the time, stays down by their side. Big deal. About 20 to 23% of the time, you will have somebody who indicates either, hey, A, a level of attraction for you, or B, high intensity, a need for your products and services. Want to see what it looks like? Attraction. "Hi, Bill, good to meet you." Left hand moves up involuntarily, 4 to 6 inches. Might go 3/4 of the way up and down. You're going to see it about 1/4 of the time. I watched every fourth handshake. "Hey, how you doing?" How crazy is that? Was he going to embrace me or what? We do it subconsciously. You've got to look me in the eyes, but you'll watch that hand, and you'll start seeing the movement and understand they immediately find you attractive as a personality. Intense need for your services? It's going to look like this. "Hi, Bill. Good to see you." tension. They tense up that left arm from the elbow down, tense the hand either this way or make a fist, you have a remarkably good opportunity to sell. This is a highly motivated individual. Almost 80% accurate, that behavior alone. I have an intense need for your services, but I don't want you to know it, so I'm going to hide it in my left hand. That's what's happening. All subconscious and all accurate. What do you not want to see? Hi, Bill, good to see you. Hey, Billy, hand in the pocket. If they actively conceal their hand as they approach, I have them down as having a hidden agenda, being a psychological game player, being an online investor. All right? I'm just messing with you. But what we're going to find is we send these tremendous signals all the time. Tomorrow in the morning, I have a session right here, I believe, from 10 to 12. I'll be looking at trustworthiness, competence, and likability. We're going to look at so many subconscious indicators that my final warning is going to be the one I'm giving you right now. 2 days with me, I will make you this guarantee. You will not be comfortable with another human being for days. I'll leave it at that. My final session tomorrow, I'm going to go over channels of nonverbal communication, looking at how you can use time to grow your business. I only have one goal. I want to help you grow your book of business. Surprisingly, you're going to find you do it by projecting love, kindness, decency. It's an amazing experience, and you can't do it verbally. You can only do it through your body language. So we will go there. Thanks for your time. See you later.